Well, the truth is that there's never been a generation where the term family farm is more relevant. Just because one corporation has the majority of ownership of a farm instead of one individual, well, that most farm corporations are family owned. And suddenly, instead of one person owning it all, you got two, three siblings or cousins farming together, or parents farming with their kids. We're sharing. And the problem we have with our generation is that we suck at sharing. The challenge of our generation is turning working with family from weakness into strength.
Ladies and gentlemen, farmers, ranchers, and distinguished guests, thank you for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast, where we discuss the latest ideas, methods, trends, and techniques available to help your farm achieve higher levels of farm profitability. The Farm for Profit podcast is co-hosted by Tanner Winterhoff, the Iowa Bankerman, and David Whitaker, the Iowa Land Guy, where in tandem, they will share their ideas and advice from industry experts. Thank you again for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast. Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long. And now, here's Tanner and David.
Hey, listeners, thanks for joining us on the Farm for Profit podcast. This is Tanner Winterhoff.
This is Corey Hillebo.
And this is David Whitaker.
We are very thankful that you continue to join us, and especially thankful for your contributions to the show, including suggesting topics. That's what we are talking about today, is one of our listeners' suggestions from Jacob Miller. So thanks for sending that in. We'll go a little bit more in depth with what he's suggesting when we get to that topic. But also, thank you for connecting with us on social media and sending us those guest suggestions, topic suggestions, everything to that farmforprofitllc@gmail.com address.
And Tanner, I was just going to echo the same thing. farm4profitllc@gmail.com.
And thanks for leaving us reviews, telling your friends and families about us. Today's Head of the Class listener review brought to you by Gearinghoff, because they are the head of the class no matter the crop. Premium harvesting heads for all your harvesting needs. Our listener reviews is exactly what we need to fuel our energy each week, and Gearinghoff is exactly what you need to maximize every harvest, Corey.
Yeah, this week's review is from Preston Duffer.
I believe Duffer, that's how you say it.
Sorry if I butchered that. Great podcast is the headline. So we could just stop right there.
We stop right there.
That's
good.
Fantastic. Thanks, Preston.
Says, not a farmer, but most of my customers are. The podcast gives me the ability to create more conversations and helps build relationships with them. You guys are helping more than just farmers in being profitable. So thank you, Preston, for that. That's a great review.
That was great. Even after the start, he could have quit after the great podcast.
Yeah.
And Tanner, you don't have to be a farmer to listen to Farm for Profit podcast. Even one of my friends from college reached out to me this last week that I had no clue listened to our podcast, and that was fantastic. So if you're listening and you're not a farmer, that's fantastic too.
It is, absolutely. And don't forget about Estes Concaves. They are working to help you stop rotor loss completely. They potentially could save you thousands of dollars, depending upon the acres that you farm, if you put their full concave system into their combine.
And they work on all crops, that XPR2, right?
Yep.
Bumps your combine up to the next level, right?
Extra horsepower availability, more capacity. It is something that's going to really help you out. Also being a little bit more gentle on your grain day.
And Tanner, if you remember, Kimberly Ag has a field day coming up, 9/15 and 9/16. So you're going to want to make sure you get that. A great local company, sells a lot of good stuff.
Right here in Central Iowa. So go check Kimberly Ag out. Go to EstesPerformanceConcaves.com. Let them know you heard it here on Farm for Profit.
And I can't wait, because I got a call today. They're coming tomorrow. My concaves are getting dropped off tomorrow morning. So hopefully by the next time we're together, I'll be talking about them.
Perfect. Absolutely.
And now, hopefully I'm not cussing on putting them in and taking the old ones out or anything
Well,
like
you're going to have great experience to share with us as to how hard, difficult that process is.
I can tell you how to do it. Yep.
That's perfect. All right. Our topic for today was suggested by Jacob Miller. He said, I've been listening to your podcast starting this year and went all the way back to the beginning to catch up. Recently, our farm was going to trade planters, but we missed the cutoff date at our dealer to put the order in. We've talked about that, how it's been really hard to get equipment these days. Dealer number one had some problems with past support. Dealer number two guaranteed a planter, so on and so forth. Him and his dad had different directions on the planter and the dealer they wanted to get them from, and it didn't result very well. What about doing a topic? We'd like to hear your insight and put some feelings aside to focus on the business dealings as to how to work better with family, whether it's between generations or between siblings. So that was from Jacob Miller, and that's what we're going to try to attack today, Corey.
Yeah, that's something that's so hard when you are in such a business that's farming, that's so personal. But yet it is a business, and that's why you have the podcast called Farm for Profit. So it's two things that are trying to come together, because you still have to be able to go to family dinner.
And generational gaps that, older generation jump how high and younger generation ask why. So, Corey, you farm with your dad, correct?
I do. I do farm with my dad and hopefully soon my brother. And my grandpa was part of the farm a little bit when I was coming back as well. So there's multiple generations, siblings, and it's just a lot of
aspects. So as we talk through this, you're going to have some good insight at the end of the podcast, I am sure.
Should we challenge Corey right now?
We should just challenge
to come up with the challenge?
Yeah.
At the end of this?
You're challenging me. Okay.
All right. So you be on the watch. You're the one that's going to deliver the challenge at the end of this.
Sounds good.
So we are now going to focus on helping stubborn farmers work together. Now, I'm going to put the broadness out there that this could be generational. This could be siblings. This could even be non-relational stubborn farmers working together. But I'm extremely excited because we have our guest today, which was another listener's suggestion, Andy Junkin. He refers to himself as Andy Cajun Junkin. God-given life mission of preventing other farmers from being faced with family frustrations. He found out that he had a natural gift to help mediate family situations and disputes. In 2010, he opened his office in Western Ontario, and over the past decade has been able to help farmers over 21 different states and 4 Canadian provinces for many years. You could say that he lived the lifestyle of a missionary priest, driving over 70,000 miles a year. I don't even have that many miles on my pickup.
Mercy.
Well, you get a new truck.
Towns are farther away in Canada. Right? That's crazy.
Doing all this together with his wife, Bernadette, he bought a little farm in Iowa, and the good Lord blessed them with 2.5 children. He's got one coming up here at the end of 2021 and an amazing marriage. Bernadette is the key driver of the business from behind the scenes, and together they're determined to help as many farmers with this issue as possible. So welcome, Andy.
Good to meet you folks. How are you?
We're good.
So are you living in Iowa now? You bought
a farm. I'm living the dream in Iowa. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Yeah. So
that's awesome.
We're just north of Mount Vernon, Iowa here. So we love it here. So.
Very cool. Where did the Cajun come from?
My hometown is Bob Cajun, Ontario. I'm a 7th generation farm boy. When I went to college, there was never a farm kid that was more passionate about where he was from. And so it was just a nickname that stuck. Everybody but my mother calls me Bob Cajun, and so our Cajun. And unfortunately, when I was 35, I was really driven to carry on as a 7th generation tradition. It really weighed heavy on my passion for farming. And when I was 35, I found myself with a rope around my neck and a 22 in my lap. I was sitting on a barn beam, and I almost killed myself because of the frustrations. It wasn't because I was mentally ill. I was emotionally very sick because we were constantly butting heads and pulling the farm in different directions, and everything just fell apart. And so since that moment, my whole life purpose has been to help other farmers avoid the same frustrations of what my family went through and turn stubborn from a bad word to a good word on so many family farms.
I think that's why we're here today. And I know we might be taking this one step further than Jacob was asking us to, but I hope we get to the bottom of a lot of things and provide some pretty good advice today. So thanks for joining us. Remember, we're going to be a little bit broad here. We're not going to be able to fix individual farm issues. This could be multi-generational. This could be siblings, so on and so forth. But there's always that dynamic, Corey, of somebody calls the shots. Somebody's the boss, whether it's set in stone and very clearly communicated or assumed, somebody calls the shots. But do we have what it takes to make people work well together?
Yeah. And I think what you said, someone always calls the shots. It's like always unspoken. It seems like communication is probably where I find myself the most terrible. And I think we communicate better than a lot, but it's still like just an unwritten rule of, dad's the one calling the shots. And it's just because he always has, right? And you just don't step out of your comfort zone.
Right. And when does it switch?
Yeah.
See, and that might even change husband and wife as well. Yep. So as more females get into this farming game, and the wife is definitely a key player in that, I think we need to involve them in the decisions. But, I think back to how I was raised. I think most would think back to how they're raised. And when I was raised, my dad called the shots on everything, but he always got input from the kids, my mom, others, elders, etc. But he was the ultimate decision maker. So he liked input from others, but he may take your idea, he may not take your idea, right. And he's going to run with it.
Right. So Andy, with your experience, how do we make it to where we end up working well with our family?
I think the biggest thing we've got to do, boys, before we get into this is really understand the biggest change we've had in technology and farming over the last 50 years. And, you know, you guys can think of half dozen other ideas, everything from GPS and the combines to biotech technology. But the biggest game changer from my perspective is the fact that fewer farmers are dropping dead of heart attacks in their 60s than back in the 1960s. I mean, modern health sciences has been a game changer. We never really think about it. But back in the 60s, when Dad was 60, he would retire because he's had bad hips. Well, nowadays, Dad's going in for hip surgery and he's farming to his 80s or 90s. And I think it's awesome. If you want to farm to the day you die and you're diehard like I am, I mean, God bless you. I'll make it happen. But the problem we have is that we got suddenly, instead of there being one dictator on the farm, we got three, four guys being the dictator.
Yep.
And because this technology is so darn expensive, it doesn't make sense every 25 years to split up capital between siblings. And so we got to keep it all together. So we got multiple siblings and cousins farming together. And we got too many chiefs and not enough Indians on too many farms. And we joke about it. We often talk about the neighbors about it. But we haven't talked about how much money is being lost because we can't sit down and make decisions together. I think the other thing we haven't talked about is not just the arguments as far as everybody butting heads and pulling the farm different directions and how much money is being lost, but how much time we're not addressing problems because we don't want to rock the boat because we're getting along with our families. And the decision to not make a decision is a decision in itself. Mm-hmm. And I found that if you can change the whole decision dynamics on the farm, you can almost double the farm's profitability. And more importantly, that frustration of farming with family goes by the wayside and farming with family becomes fun again.
So Tanner, I just like came up with three questions in my head just from that statement. So if we have three dictators and we have older generation coming in, one was, when does the old generation retire? But before that, let's back up. How do we as people set who the leader is? So how do we set, first of all, how many dictators we have? Well, hopefully we have one. And how do we set who the leader is? So that's a question we might try and unpack. And then with that, how do we make sure that we're inclusive to everybody else that is in the farming operation? I think those three things, when does the person retire? How do we set who's in the lead? And then how does that leader make sure that they're inclusive?
Right. I think that'll be a good target for us to come through today. And the other thing that Andy hit on that really I think resonates with our podcast is, as you are debating, deliberating, arguing, fighting, whichever it is, how much time is wasted and how much profit goes out the window? Because time's money. We've said that over and over again. So how much time is misused or wasted to argue on a decision or fester on someone choosing something that isn't what you thought?
I was even going to say, even he said that the decision to not make a decision is a decision.
Right.
So how many times are you just happy with the status quo because you're not making ripples in the relationships when you're leaving stuff on the table.
Right. You're just not fighting. Everything's okay.
Yep.
But
you wouldn't believe how much money is actually lost through just by that. You just wouldn't believe how I'm almost able to double farm's profitability just by fixing that one problem. Right. And more importantly, the issue of implementation, how many times you come up with a great idea as a family and then it doesn't get followed through on.
Right.
And how much frustration does that cause at family Christmas? It's huge.
And change in itself is just overwhelming. In a lot of these changes, you know, you're trying to update tractors possibly in the good times and make decisions on fertilizer that's doubled in price and all this stuff. And then all of a sudden you're telling me that we need to go put $200,000 in tile in the ground or, you know, build a hog barn or, you know, revamp the grain system. I mean, it's just like, it's overwhelming.
Right. Right. So then Andy, when you start to attack this, I assume one of the first conversations you have is we got to figure out what the goals are of each farm or each client base that you work with. That's probably something you need to attack. Is that right?
Yeah. You got to get everybody pulling this. I mean, my whole deal is how do you get everybody from butting heads and pulling the farm in different directions? And you have to understand that 10 years ago, when I was driving all these crazy amount of miles, I used to go out to the farm and try to solve all the problems on the farm in one day. Right. Because if you drive to Montana from Ontario, Canada,
right,
I mean, you're going to try to get as much covered as possible.
Yep.
But I do everything over Skype. And so I try. I mean, I just 10 minutes ago before I came on this podcast, I was talking to a German Baptist in Kansas. right? And, you know, we talked away for about half an hour. We got some traction on how they operate. And so what I found is short, sweet meetings, instead of trying to fix all the family problems at once, if you can make a couple improvements every week as to how the family works together, and you do that over 6 months, that's 25 improvements to how the family works together. And if you do that for 2-3 categories, that's over 75 improvements to how the family works together. Your farm is going to be a heck of a lot different in a year's time. That's what I found. But so, I mean, when it comes down back to your issue, I mean, setting goals is absolutely critical. I'll give an example. I had a farm where there was a grandson who was 30 years old and grandma was fixing lunch and the son was there at the kitchen table too. And they were talking about buying the farm down the road. And grandma said, "Oh, that's too much money." And then the grandson said, "Well, we don't have enough debt." And then grandma took that milk pitcher she was holding and she threw it across the room and hit her grandson on the side of the head. And the thing is that's common, because the issue that they had was, I mean, grandma had a lot of respect for the grandson, but the grandson had gone to Cornell College and his professor had taught him to max out the amount of credit you can access. And in grandma went through, they almost lost the farm in 83. And her goal has been over the last 30 years is to have been dropped down the debt. And she was really proud of where they were at. And, you know, neither was wrong. There's many ways to skin a cat, but what you got to do is you got to get a consistency in the philosophy of how you farm. It's not just an issue of setting goals. It's an issue of getting consensus as to how we're going to manage this farm. And so there's got to be some things that happened in the past that's got to continue into the future. Like, you know, having low debt to equity is important to grandma. So with every farm, I suggest you identify 5 things that made the farm successful that you got to continue doing on into the future. Right. And then I suggest you like low debt to equity. I mean, for that family, it was just a matter of getting them to agree that they didn't get their debt to equity over 25%. And because the grandma was assured by grandson that he understood that concept of why, instead of, you know, because it came to the philosophy, that being a core value for the farm, she had a lot less hesitation to pass over the farm to her grandchild.
And the grandchild didn't bring any ideas up then, because he knows if it requires taking debt on that exceeds that 25% level, it's out.
Are you guys dairy farmers? Either one of you guys? Okay, so there's many ways to milk a cow. I don't know if you ever milked a cow, but basically if you have 3 people milking the cow different ways, you're going to get a cow that's sick because of mastitis. Well, it's the same thing with a family farm. If you've got 3 people trying to manage a farm in different, I mean, everybody might have good intentions, and there's many ways you can skin a cat as far as farming. There's many ways you can operate a farm successfully. But what's important is that you get everybody, instead of butting heads and pulling the farm in different directions, you get everybody on the same page as to the philosophy of how you want to farm and get everybody pulling the same direction. And, you know, that part of that's identifying what made the farm succeed in the past, and then identifying what has to change for the farm to be successful in the future. I mean, that same operation I talked to you about, grandpa was bragging because he built a barn in 85 with no nails, right? He didn't have to buy nails because he always straightened out every nail and saved, you know, them in mason jars. Well, grandson came across grandpa, and grandpa's tearing apart a shed. He's got 5 men working for him, and grandpa's got the same mason jar, and he's sitting on the tailgate. And 2 days before, we sat down, and one of the values we came up with is we got to stop pinching pennies and focus on the dollars. Now, grandpa sitting down and talking about 10 core values, 5 from the past, 5 that got to change in the future, kind of thought it was a waste of time. But that day when grandson came across the grandfather, he says, "Grandpa, we got to stop pinching pennies and focus on the dollars. These hired men, that guy's cost me $17. That guy's cost me $22 an hour. And we're losing half our time because we're trying to straighten out nails that could have cost us less than $5. Mm-hmm. Right? And because they had the same principles agreed upon, the way that they went from constantly bickering about every little decision to everybody being on the same page and pulling the same direction just completely changed that operation. And succession planning 6 months later was easy because they operated on the same philosophy. I mean, goal setting is important, but that's just, I mean, what I'm saying to you is that's just one simple way to improve how a family works together is getting 10 common values.
Right.
But if you can make a couple improvements like that every week for 6 months or once a month over 2 years, I mean, your operation is going to function at a whole different level of profitability. And you eliminate that bickering and where the money slips in cracks and farming becomes fun again.
That just reminded me of a story. One of the prior bank presidents used to ask everybody to keep the receipt tape. So on your adding machine, there's a roll of receipt tape that would keep track of everything. He wanted you to re-roll that and then flip it. So that way you are now typing on the backside of the original roll. And he didn't realize how much the employees hated that task of trying to keep it straight, not ripping it, not want you to meet his expectation, and didn't realize how much more stress that caused on the employees than what the value was. So that's a really good example of, yeah, if we all are on the same page, we don't have to talk about it. It's just a thought. We just know.
But Tanner, how much of that is communication? So without that communication, we don't know that his expectation was to save paper. Their expectation was, you crazy man, we're flipping over paper and re-rolling it. So unless somebody communicates, and everybody's a little sheepish to do that because we don't want to tell the boss they're wrong, and we feel the boss is going to tell us how it is any way you look at it. Yeah. So initiating that conversation might be a challenge.
Right. I would also argue that grandsons and sons, granddaughters and daughters, don't want to disappoint their parents. In very, very few situations do they want to do anything that makes their parents or grandparents disappointed about them. Vice versa, yeah. I think parents would say the same thing. They don't want to embarrass the other generation. So without words being said, they're all almost walking on eggshells to begin with.
So, Andy, is there a time to bite your lip and bide your time? You know, I feel like I've had other people come in that I'm like, oh, you shouldn't have said that. Oh, you shouldn't. It's not the time. It doesn't seem right to tell grandpa that or whatnot. Is there a mentality of younger farmers that bite their lip and bide their time and don't bring it up because they don't feel it's right?
I think you guys as a family have to sit down and talk. You have to have an agreement as to having a family business meeting. So for some families, it's every week. For some families, it's once a month. But for 95% of farms right now, there isn't a time, right? So, you know, quite often, it's like a stone in your shoe, okay? If I had a stone in my boot, we as farmers have a common sense to sit down and take a stone out of our shoe. Now, I had a cousin who was also a neighbor. The problem was that he was a cousin a couple different ways. That's the inbred town that I'm from. But the thing is, back in Bob Cajun, right? The thing is, anyway, so the thing is, he didn't take a stone out of his shoe. He's a bachelor. He wouldn't admit that he had a problem. And then he started walking around the stone shoe to the point that he got gangrene in his foot and we had to amputate it. And for a lot of farm families, there's a stone in your shoe or a pet peeve that you have or a problem that you've identified in the business, but you don't want to say something because that falls into your other partner's territory. And so it rubs you the wrong way until you have a big fight. It's like gangrene setting in your foot. If you had addressed it earlier, it would have not been a big deal.
Right. Tanner, I could argue that with my wife.
I'm a huge believer that you should have as a family, you should have a time and place that everybody has to come to the table with one business problem they've identified, and then you sit down as a family and problem solve. And you start off with small little issues. Like I like to, with the family meetings I chair, everybody has to come to the table with an idea to improve farm profit between $1,000 to $5,000, but it can't cost more than $1,000 to do. And so the rule of thumb, if you have five people come to the table with different ideas, you know, even if half those ideas get only adopted, that's at least $10,000 to improve profitability is generally what I find. Between $5,000 to $10,000. Sometimes you make $50,000. I mean, it all depends on the meeting.
Sure.
But then the bigger thing is what you do is you get used to listening to each other's ideas. So when it comes to doing a barn expansion or it comes to build a bigger strategic play like succession planning, you're used to listening to each other's opinions instead of you got to get – The issue we have in farms is the I'm smarter than you attitude. And, you know, if you can get family members to actually come to the table, bring ideas and listen to each other's ideas and then collaborate and add on to those ideas, what you're doing is you're fixing the fundamentals of how the family problem solves. And if you do that with small ideas, then you can apply it to bigger issues like succession planning.
That's a good point. And it just sparked in my head that there's a lot of farms that will willingly listen to the opinions of an agronomist, an accountant, a banker, an attorney,
neighbor,
but they won't to their own family. Mm-hmm. Won't even to maybe you don't even do family, but an employee. So they may have just as good of an idea, but because it's their son or their employee, it doesn't register, doesn't get heard. But yet, if you were a paid agronomist saying, no, this is something we need to do, they'd probably take your advice and write the check.
Well, my wife says that to my father-in-law. We just got to make dad think it's his idea. And then it'll come through. See, and it's worked that way.
But how many years does it take for a good idea to actually get adapted?
That's the problem.
Right.
And then a lot of farms, it's taken 5 years for you to suggest an idea for dad to actually apply it. But the problem we have with young lads is when young lads come home from college, they got a ton of ideas to improve the operation.
Yep, full of ideas.
Well, my dad plowed down my crops, right? Because my mother, the day I left for college, she said to me, if you don't fix these farm financials, I'm leaving your father. So I came home with five Tupperware containers full of data and research to turn around a farm. But my dad rejected every one of the ideas. And I couldn't understand that because my friends, they did their business plans. I spent, 18 months putting together a business plan that was 1,000 pages. My best friends, when they went to college, they did the business plan the day before it was due in class. And yet my friends, they had their parents go build those barns, adapt those ideas. And I was really jealous of them. And I couldn't figure out why my dad wouldn't listen to my ideas when they were so well thought through. And my friends, they got their dreams, their parents. The thing is that the parents bent over backwards to implement their ideas because they didn't want to say no to their kids. But at some point in time, these suggestions from the kids are seen as a statement to mom and dad that you haven't been doing things right. Mm-hmm. And soon these ideas for change are seen as a rejection of past management decisions. And soon decisions go from being rational to irrational or emotional, where at some level, whether it's conscious or subconscious, parents start to say no to kids' ideas because they get defensive of what past management decisions have been made rather than what's good for the farm in the future. And that in itself is the root of all evils on a lot of family farms, is getting a time and place that you can have mom and dad come to the table with new ideas to improve the operation the same as the son and daughter, so that you guys all start listening to each other. I mean, you're more likely, if a son says an idea to a father in the yard, the dad's going to have his arms crossed and not going to be wanting to listen to it. But if the father's going to pitch his idea in about 3 minutes after the son pitches his, after you're done discussing his idea, the father's going to be more opening to listening to the son and daughter's idea. And soon it doesn't matter if the son or daughter says the idea or if it's the son-in-law that the father-in-law hates. Right, that you actually start measuring the value of the ideas based on merit, and being able to talk about the pros and cons is really critical. Sometimes ideas are good, but they just need to be tweaked in order to be practical for your operation.
So, is the at the core of your things that you do is the family meeting like the main one? I mean, what I'm looking at is when you first initiated family meeting, I was thinking, well, yeah, that makes sense, get together and figure things out, but in all reality, it's a tool to get you to learn how to cope with one another.
Communicate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's only three things I do. Okay. One is I get the family. Everybody has to come to the table with an idea to improve farm profit by $1,000 without spending $1,000. Okay. And then the latter half of that meeting, I suggest make one suggestion for improving how the family works together. It might be getting a set of 10 core values. And then behind the scenes, one-on-one, I talk to each person. We make one improvement to character. So for instance, if you have a tendency to, you have anger management issues. If you tend to see things, turn things from a molehill into a mountain, how can you actually practically over the next 12 weeks, turn that bad habit into a good habit, right? Yeah. And if you can get every family member to identify one area that they need to improve in the character, over and you have 26 improvements to a person's character, that business partnership is going to be on a completely different level. And more importantly, if you get dad to do something like anger management to quell his anger, that's tougher to do than to make a production related change like getting rid of the bull calves that you've been feeding for the last 20 years because you're just not efficient at that. But I have often seen, like I had a farmer, we flew in a so-called expert. And we had $500,000 in improvements to the farm profitability within 2 hours figured out. and that farm needed it or else they were going to go broke, or the son-in-law wasn't going to be able to enter the operation. And the father rejected all those changes that were suggested because somebody criticized what he did. What he did on the farm was he fed bull calves. That was his little fiefdom, right? And what we started doing with him was changing his anger management. And after 6 months working with him, it was really tough for him to change his his anger management, right? But if you can get a guy to make an improvement like that, then making a production level improvement is easy. Yeah. You know, when I flew out to these farms 10 years ago, everybody sitting around the kitchen table with their arms crossed, everybody says that there needs to be a change, whether it's a farm succession problem or a farm debt turnaround. Everybody's got their arms crossed and saying, well, something has to change. But everybody expects everybody else to change. And the only thing I'm concerned about is getting everybody to identify that they need to self-improve.
Yep.
And if you can get that in place, if you can get everybody really stubborn at self-improvement, and you can get everybody listening to each other, the changes that happen are positive instead of negative on that farm.
And I would argue a lot of our listeners are probably in that category to where listening to this episode is going to go a long ways because they're already in self-improvement mode because they choose to listen to the Farm for Profit podcast. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just one of those things by nature. They have to click on this every week and have to put themselves in it. But I want to go back to a couple of these lines, and I think we're going to reiterate some things during this show because you're saying a lot of good things, but getting used to listening to other people's ideas. This isn't just a farm thing. This is every kind of business. This is in your family. If you can frame another person's idea as not an attack on something that you've done, it's not saying that you're wrong. Maybe it's a way to elaborate or improve or whichever it is. That's a huge personal characteristic I think anybody can employ. And then the second thing that I pulled off your website in our pre-conversation is you're not trying to fix these families' problems forever.
No.
Your goal is trying to fix how the family solves problems in the future. And that's kind of the base.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to problem solve how you problem solve. So, I mean, 10 years ago, I used to fly out to farms and I'd be the hero that saved the farm. I mean, solve some sort of problem the family had, whether it was succession planning or farm debt turnaround. And then 3 years later, I'd be called back out to the farm. And I thought that was because I was such a great guy. But the root issue is I didn't really problem solve how the family problem solved. And so anything you can do to improve the quality of decision making is going to skyrocket the farm's profitability. And anything you can do to get and improve the quality of decision making, it's going to get rid of all the frustrations of farming with family, and farming becomes fun again.
So he's teaching them to fish and not giving them the
not
fish.
Not giving them the fish. Oh, look at you.
Kind of teaching them to farm, not, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, you got it.
You get it.
You're not just giving them the farm.
But I can tell you this is that if you've got a partner that sometimes they give off that sense that they have an I'm smarter than you attitude, you're losing about half of your potential profit on that farm. Because I guarantee you that you have the same attitude sometimes. And if you can get rid of the I'm smarter than you attitude and have an attitude of a humility where you guys are able to, instead of one person being a power play over decision making, we're able to make decisions with humility and listen to the best idea and the best, instead of it being more important to be right, it becomes more important for things to be right. You can double your farm profitability. It's unbelievable.
Tanner, it makes me think of a story at the fire station. So one time we were putting a metal bracket to hold a ladder up on a concrete wall. And one of the other firefighters says, oh, we'll just use some drywall anchors. And I'm thinking to myself, drywall anchors are for drywall, you dingbat. There's no way they're going to work in this concrete. And my lieutenant just kind of grabbed my shoulder, says, just let someone else's opinion ride this time. And I said, well, you know what's going to fail? He says, yeah, I know it's going to fail. He says, just let him do it. He says, sometimes just being heard isn't always the thing. Let them do it their way, even if it fails, even if we're going to lose money. Well, 3 days later, the thing fell off the wall and we redid it with the concrete anchors. But, you know, some of it is just learning to work with other people.
Yeah, and I followed that, but I also would then challenge that story in your supervisor's role and say, maybe there was a more tactful way to say, no, dingbat, we're not using the drywall anchors.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what if someone was on it when it fell and they got hurt?
Right, yeah, correct.
And instead of a $10 expense, it was a $100,000 expense or whatever it was. So that, yeah, I totally get that. But
just want to interject there is that I see a lot of fathers, they have their kids go off to college and they come back with a bunch of ideas and they don't want to say no to their kids' dreams, even though the father's like, that's not going to work. And the problem is that fodder doesn't express that, and then he finances that, and then 5 years later, he constantly brings up that mistake.
Corey, did you have that problem?
No, not really. My dad's pretty open. I mean, I did have a large list of
ideas
when I came back. I think one thing that we've heard reoccurring of several of our guests is their family not only made them maybe go to college, but made them go work somewhere else before coming back to the farm. Learning to work with other people that aren't your family
before you
and
come.
See how businesses are ran, and whether it's in ag or not, is a what I think is very valuable coming back to work with your family that's in a business together.
But I think the thing is, if you can get really good at weighing pros and cons of ideas on small decisions, then you don't make those $100,000 mistakes. How many times have you seen a farm go bankrupt because the son wants to get a robotic milkers in place or a new type of barn, but the parents don't want to say no? Well, the thing is that they've been good at teaching their kids how to work. They've been good at transferring assets to their kids, but they haven't been good at transferring wisdom. And what I like about these meetings is every meeting, if you can tell your son that's a dumb idea, but explain why, then you're transferring wisdom. And I think that a lot of farmers are really good at transferring assets, but they're terrible at transferring wisdom. So, because how many times have you seen the neighbors leave a farm in good financial position, and then 20 years later, that farm's pissed away? That's because a father, any fool can give a son a daughter a tractor, but very few farmers are successful in transferring wisdom so they can make that tractor pay.
And that might be a generational thing. I know my dad was a Marine, and if he says jump, you don't ask why, you just jump, and you say how high. And so I see the younger generation come, they'll totally be on your team, and they'll be behind your decision, even if you tell them no. But just what you said, you got to explain why. So it might be the younger generation learning to sometimes just trust the opinion of the older generation. The older generation helping educate why they were saying no.
Well, I even think about my 7 and 5 year old. They're in the why stage.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I say just because.
Just because. Just because. Because I said so.
Just do it. And that's probably not good enough when it comes to the farm family business.
No, not in business. Now, as a mother or mother-father relationship to a child, probably it's okay. But yeah.
Well, a lot of families have a hard time transitioning from the mother-child relationship
to
the
business.
Professional relationship. Yep. I mean, that's why I created a course called Coming Home to Farm. And basically, it's for farm kids as they come home to farm. It's like a pre-marriage class before they marry the farm. And so it really questions whether or not you're serious about farming. Why are you farming? Are you farming because your parents want you to or because you really want to? But more importantly, it gets the professional relationship. How are we going to make decisions together? How are we going to take decision making from good to great? So it's not just going to be the son walking in the father's shadow for the next 15 years, but that the son and daughter can constructively provide feedback on how to improve the operation without it coming across as criticism. And these type of things. It's being taught by several colleges like University of Illinois and also Washington State Farm Bureau is really pushing it. But I did a new version of the course. Instead of 15 hours, we filtered it down to an hour. And your listeners can go to agriculturestrategy.com and get it free this fall. And basically, it's an hour-long course. And then we give you a five-minute segment every day that you can listen to on the toilet. And you can go. I'll sit down with your family at the end of the week and talk about the ideas you actually want to implement in a practical way that works for your farm.
That's perfect. Yeah. I think we're getting to the root of our listeners' question. It sounds like we first got to start working and fixing the family relationship and making sure the family's all aligned. But one of the questions Jacob had for us was, how do you gain the ability to disagree at work, and works in quotations, meaning at the farm, and still be cordial at the supper table? Or the family picnic, or whatever it is. Do you have any tips for our listeners on how to separate business and family?
You know, we always talk about mental health these days and a chemical imbalance, but we talk about what's going on the 15 seconds before a guy jumps, but we don't talk about what's going on the 15 years before that moment. And what's going on is a situation most family farms where it's more important to be right than for things to be right. We get into that rut. And what we got to start thinking about, instead of looking at things my way or your way and constantly butting heads and pulling farm in different directions, we got to look at, the answer is just one simple thing. It's on the edge of my fingertips. And the answer is, instead of looking at things one way, we got to look at things five different ways for every decision. And we got to get really good at flushing out, you know, not only here's one way of doing things and the second way. for every strategic decision, we've got to look at three things five different ways. And it might be an extra 5 minutes of discussion that might not lead to anywhere. You still might go to option number one or option number two, but it will prevent 15 years from now a family member that you love from being 5 minutes on a barn beam thinking about killing themselves. And more importantly, you know, if you can look at things five different ways, maybe that fifth option might be a more economical way to do things. And more importantly, by you listening to each other's ideas and brainstorming a couple of different ideas together, you guys feel listened to and you feel ownership in the operation, not just feel it's mom and dad's farm.
Tanner, we kind of, I think back to the fire station, I had to live with guys every third day of your life, and there's five different opinions there. So you got five different guys. So kind of like living together with your family, but yet everybody's type A personality, ready to kick butt and take names. So they all have their own opinion. So very strong-willed people that work in the past that I've worked in. And what we did was have a mutual agreement amongst all the guys that we might say some tough things, but it's we're still all friends at the end of the day. So you'd give somebody the middle finger, they'd give it back, and then you'd go eat dinner together. And it was just, but it was pre-talked about that was the culture, that was the camaraderie that you were expected to have in the military, at the fire station with the paramilitary type deal, where families might not do that. You don't give the middle finger to your dad and he doesn't give it back, and then, all right, hey, let's go eat, everything's good. But they learn to not hold the emotion nearly as long.
Well, for a lot of farms, there's a culture where it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission, and we got to get rid of that. You got to have a time and place once a week or once a month where you bring up new ideas and you get everybody on the same page and making decisions together. And then the rest of the week or the rest of the month, you guys got to run the operation as smoothly as possible and not have everybody going off and pulling the farm in different directions. You got to be on the same page.
Do you think it'd be good to have, I know Tanner and I talk about having a board, an advisory board. Do you think it would take the weight off the younger generation to talk with the father if there was an advisory board there, and the advisory board might agree with the son and say, that's a great idea? And then would dad accept that idea more? Do you think that would help the monthly meeting?
It might eventually, but I'd say in 99% of cases, that's not the first place I would start.
Okay.
I'd start with everybody, first of all. I mean, I've done a lot of farm debt turnarounds where we flew in an expert that came on the farm and told you what to do. Within the kitchen table, you have the answers to 80% of your problems. First of all, fix those problems. And through that, you gain respect for one another. I mean, who wants to have somebody come onto your farm and tell you how to farm? Is that really what a son or daughter really wants for their long-term future? No, you want to have ownership in, not necessarily as far as shares in the corporation, but you have ownership in decision-making from day one. And so you got to fix that first. And then maybe at a later stage, you can get outside advisors and get their input. But 99% of the times where I've seen an advisor being flown in, those ideas never got implemented because somebody didn't have ownership in the decision-making process.
I would second that. Just in the banking world, same thing. You can hire consultants all you want, but unless it's an internal idea or someone has buy-in from management, you're going to go that route. But I think for Jacob's question, we've done a lot of things. If we can establish the five things that we do well on the farm and the five things we need to improve, and we can look at strategically four or five different ways to address each problem, there's going to be less heartbreak when your suggestion isn't taken, when your idea is shot down, because it's well thought out. It either aligns with the mission or it doesn't align with the mission. You've already communicated that. So no longer are you as pissed off at the end of the day, or shouldn't be, because you've got your communication lined up a lot better. It probably makes those family gatherings and family suppers a lot easier to chill out and just enjoy being family.
But one of the things I always implement within the first 12 weeks of working with a family is a shopping list. And it's just a simple matter of getting the family members to identify what has to be bought as far as equipment, what has to be bought for personal expenses. I mean, annually, you might put siding on the side of the house. Well, it's good to have that on a shopping list instead of seeing your sister-in-law all of a sudden ordering siding for the house, a side of the house, when you yourself can't afford certain personal expenses. So for every farm family, I suggest that you have, on a quarterly basis, you have a shopping list, or an annual basis, you have a shopping list, and then you budget quarterly as to, okay, are we going to be buying a combine? What's more of a priority? is buying a combine the priority this year or buying the farm next door? And for you guys to agree upon that before somebody goes to the dealership to buy that combine is absolutely critical. And it's not just dad makes that decision. It should be every family member should be on board. Does that make sense?
I got a big shopping list. Yeah, X9, couple new Gehringhoff heads. Just, oh my gosh.
But you only got so much money. And yeah. How many times you heard of dad going to town buying a combine and coming home with it, and the son's like, well, I had a daughter. That was a situation. Dad came home with a combine because the two boys wanted it. Well, she was the one in the dairy barn that was improving herd health. She wanted to spend some money on the calf barn for calf ventilation because they had a 30% death rate. And that was a $10,000 cost. And dad said that they didn't have money for that, but yet they had money for combine that they didn't have the acres to justify. Mm-hmm. And they needed to get a shopping list. And if you can make a couple improvements like that every week, as getting a shopping list or getting a 10 commandments, you could turn around a farmer in a long way in a half year.
Tanner, it might be some of the bureaucratic jobs I've worked. You had to have 3 proposals before you can, submit this. And one thing you learn there is have the answer to the question before they ask it. I wonder if the kid that wants the new combine or the daughter that wants the new ventilation system might go the extra step. I've tried to do this is prepare the answers to the questions that you think they're going to ask. Well, how much does it cost? Well, it costs this much. Well, how do you know that? Well, I've already researched it. Here's the answers to it. Well, what's that? How much money is that going to make us? Here's the answers to what that is. Oftentimes, we just come with an idea. We should get one of those. Well, we don't justify it. So maybe we try and justify as the people that want the extras or want the new ideas, have the justification before the idea, before you ever bring it to the table might be a good.
Right. But I also don't want to mislead our listeners in the example that Andy gave us that he worked really hard on a college project, brought it back to his dad and he shot it down, not even questioning it. So until we get attitudes and reflect internally to accept projects and ideas, we don't want to create a lot of additional work.
Well, that's what Andy's teaching them is how to communicate. Like you said, Corey, you thought shopping list, really you're just getting them together so they're getting used to talking to each other and tell you the truth.
What I want to do first is get 1,000 families bickering about $1,000 decisions. So when it comes to buying a combine or buying the farm next door, we've already got the culture in place for making those type of decisions.
Good thought.
Because, I've seen families argue. I mean, I have family, they spent 20 minutes arguing about where to put a water bowl. And then 6 months later, we went to buy the farm next door. It was a 15-minute decision. And the thing is that would have never happened if we didn't have that 20-minute argument about the water bowl. And, I've got kids. My Huckleberry, he's 3 years old, and Samuel Colt, he's 2. And it's going to take me 5 years to teach him table manners. I have a cousin, Ethel, and she comes to Christmas dinner, and it's pretty obvious her kid has never sat down at the kitchen table, and then she wonders why there's a tantrum every time they sit down at Christmas. Well, you have a succession planner show up to the farm, and the family's never sat around to talk about where any type of decision, and everybody's come to the table with expectations, and everybody's upset that everybody doesn't have the same expectations. The problem is not in the succession planner's fault. It's the fault that the family never sat down and make strategic decisions together to begin with.
Right.
And all succession planning is a 10-year plan about where the farm's going to be. And you got to get the family before we start doing succession planning, you got to get the family used to listening to each other, or else it's going to be a nightmare. Even if you have a family that gets along great, you got to get the culture in place so you can take decision making to the next level so that it's not a disaster.
Right. I like that. I like a lot of this show. And unfortunately, we're kind of running short on time, but there's 2 questions, Andy, that we're going to address here at the end. But before we get to those last 2 questions, do you feel like there's anything else we want to cover for our listeners today before we wrap this baby up?
Well, my ancestors came over from Ireland in 1832, and they settled Bob Cajun. And there must have been an overwhelming feeling that they must have experienced. And I think that in every farmer's life, there's a moment when you got to make 1 + 1 = 4. And it's overwhelming. And, we think about farming. I think about cattle. I'm a cattle guy. For a lot of my friends, they think about tractors and the feeling you get on the first day of spring when you're driving that brand new tractor. I mean, to everybody, farming's a different thing. But, I mean, my ancestors in 1832, they just had a few hand tools that you'd find in your garden shed nowadays. I mean, farming has changed over the years, but the one thing that's been consistent is the need to change. You see, the thing is, my ancestors, when they came over in 1832, I guarantee you 10 years later, they're different. What made our farm succeed is carried on over the generations is the fact that they became stubborn. They became resilient and persistent. What caused my family to fail was the fact that we were stubborn. And we failed to change who we were as persons. My dad and I were so stubborn, we refused to change who we are. And as a result, we're out of farming. And that's the way it has been with farming ever since over the last 200 years, is every generation, half the farmers fail. And for the pioneers that came out west, half those pioneers went to the cities or they went to back to Europe because they couldn't hack it, because they refused to change. And the challenge for our generation, these hippies in California say that the family farmer is dead. Well, the truth is that there's never been a generation where the term family farmer is more relevant. Just because one corporation has the majority of ownership of a farm instead of one individual, well, that most farm corporations are family owned. And suddenly, instead of one person owning it all, you got 2-3 siblings or cousins farming together, or parents farming with their kids. And so we're sharing. And the problem we have with our generation is that we suck at sharing. And if we want to pass over grandma's farm to our grandkids, we got to learn how to share. We got to learn what our grandmas tried to teach us in the back of the sandbox behind the house, and apply those principles to the family farm at a whole different level. If you want to be farming in 30 years time, the challenge of our generation isn't grasshoppers or the 80s farm crisis. The challenge of our generation is turning working with family from weakness into strength. And half the farms that will learn how to do this, and they'll still be around, and half the farms will never do that, and they won't be farming in 30 years time.
Good. Well, I like that.
I've got so much to say that, I think we'll just go on to your two answers. I mean, I just come to my website. If you like what we're talking about, I'll give you 7 ideas that you can actually change your perspective on farm decision-making that you never hear about before.
So this just popped into my mind. I'm trying to think of these family meetings. We used to have family meetings quite a bit. We don't do them as much anymore. Like, what is the process that you're doing to initiate this family meeting, and how does the family meeting look like? Are you running as like a conduct of meetings? Is there a leader in it, or, you know, how does it look like?
It depends on the personalities in the family, right? But basically what my goal is after 26 weeks is to get the family to the point that they can do it themselves. So it might be one person prompting leadership. Every family is going to be a little bit different, so I don't think there's a good answer for that. Mm-hmm. My goal after 26 weeks is to really evolve the quality of decision-making, and as a result, and basically turn bad habits on the farm into good habits, and really turn stubborn, the family being stubborn with each other, and to stop being stubborn how they work together, and to start being more stubborn at the habits that they need to improve on themselves, to turn bad habits into good habits so that, you know, working with family is easy.
Do you have a generic outline, or is that different with every situation as well?
I think the generic outline that I have, as I said before, is one, as I get everybody to come to the table with an idea to improve profitability. I have one improvement. I make one recommendation as to how the family works together. And like I said, like a shopping list, or getting the family in the habit of getting 10 commandments. And then each week we make one improvement in everybody's character. And so if you have three partners, there's three partners, all they may all be trying to work on anger management because they have that in common. And then towards the end of the program, we identify bad habits that each individual has themselves and try to turn them into good habits.
So as we get ready to wrap this up, Andy, we ask the same question to every one of our guests. The farms that you've worked with, you've obviously got to witness a lot of different operations. What do the most successful family farms all have in common?
The change in attitude from "I'm perfect, my partner's got to change" to "I've got to change." You know, I think as farmers, I think there's no better place for a kid to grow up than the family farm. And I think 4-H exemplifies personal development and growth. And I was sitting in a family meeting one time, and there was two brothers about to split the partnership. And that's because nobody wanted to change. Yet here the kid is at the kitchen window leading a 4-H calf. And that kid was 14 years of age and keen to farm. But the way the adults were in the room, nobody wanted to change. Yet the kid was self-improving himself. And yet the adults in the room weren't willing to change the point that they were never, that kid was never going to get the opportunity to improve, to farm. And I think where we get off at having the attitude that as a teenager, you got to grow and see the challenges of farming as a way to improve. And yet as an adult, we think that we're perfect and everybody else has to improve. And so if you can see the farm as a challenge to always become a better person, you can pass over grandma's farm to your grandchildren.
Right. I like that. So before we get into the final question, listeners, don't forget about BW Fusion. They're focused on bringing innovative fertility, nutritional, and technology products to the ag marketplace. They combine their best-in-class products along with the 365 soil and tissue program to provide growers and Corey the tools necessary to address the limiting factors in real time, helping you achieve the maximum potential of your crops.
I'm actually thinking about getting Bodie Kitchell in town, possibly, and doing a little talk before harvest. So if anyone's interested in that, reach out to Tanner.
To Tanner, not to Corey.
To the podcast. Yeah. And let us know if you would be, because we don't have a date for that. And I got a call later today, but we'll see.
All right, Andy, last question that I've got for you is, we know that there is somebody listening to us right now that probably thinks they don't need any help, that they're doing just fine all by themselves. What parting words would you have for somebody that thinks it's all just good to go?
Well, let's take two neighbors. Let's say that we all know it takes about $3 million at least to be able to support a family on farming, right? So let's take two farms, they're neighbors. One farm's worth $30 million and one farm's worth $3 million. And let's say that both farms have the same amount of family members farming together. And on both farms today, they're butting heads and pulling the farm in different directions. Right. They might make to the community that everything's perfect, but behind the barn, there's 5% that could be improved on how they operate. And there's money slipping between the cracks because of it. Now, I ask you two different questions. Is that, let's say that the next 7 years out of the next 10 are low commodity prices. OK, who is going to be able to make the changes? Let's assume that the $30 million farm, they stay the same. The $3 million farm, take what we learned today and recognize the need to turn stubborn from a bad word to a good word on the farm, and the need to self-improve, and then they need to improve the quality of decision-making on the farm. They take decision-making at a completely different level. Now, let's say it's low economy in the next 7 years out of 10. The $30 million farm today has a slight competitive advantage because they have the economies of scale. But who is going to be able to make the drastic changes that are necessary to be able to overcome tough times? I mean, last July, it was 325 corn. There was a lot of farms that are bleeding. What happens if 7 years or the next 10 years are like that? Who's going to be able to make the decisions, the farm that making decisions together as a team at a different level, or the family that continues to be dysfunctional, everybody butts head and pull the farm in different directions? Second question I've got for you is, whose family Christmas do you want to go to? Whose farm do you want to work at every day? The family that everybody's butting heads and pulling the farm in different directions and can't make half the decisions that they should, or the family that's got is on the same page and pulling the farm in different directions? That's the only question I got for you.
Yep.
But I think that should change your mind if you're skeptical.
And I would agree. If you do have a thought that you don't need this process, dig a little deeper. It's not saying you need to turn the entire farm around or change your entire character, your own personal being. Let's just strive for that next 5% better. Mm-hmm. Just keep making those little steps that we talk about. You do a little thing right this week and you do it next week and just think where your farm can be. It might be great now. Let's shoot for fantastic. Let's hit one of those Tanner words.
Oh, fantastic.
Fantastic. Let's get some fantastic out there. Andy, thank you so much for joining us. Remind us how people can find you and how they can find that masterclass.
Just go to agriculturestrategy.com. Agriculturestrategy.com.
Awesome. I'm going to do my best to summarize. And then if you've got anything after that, Andy, don't be afraid to interject it. And then Corey, don't forget, you're the challenge king.
Yep.
So today we talked about how we can get stubborn farmers to work well together. That could be generational. It doesn't have to be, but that's what we're focusing on. Short, sweet meetings, small impacts. How do you get good to great? You know, things like that we put together. Start with maybe identifying five things that your farm has done successfully in the past, and then identify five things that your farm might need to change to be successful in the future. Choosing to not make a decision is a decision. Whether it's good or bad, that's still a choice. So don't always take in action as the best way to go about it. Work on personally getting used to listening to other people's ideas and not taking it as criticism. They might not always be telling you they're wrong, but there could be something good in each one of those ideas that comes out. Work on setting up family meetings to where you can all bring a small problem that you think could be fixed all together and brainstorm ways to make those better. The one thing that Andy suggested is bring a $1,000 profit to $5,000 profit boosting idea that costs you less than $1,000. And maybe after each family meeting, you can end up with a $10,000 boost to your bottom line. But the important thing to do is to continue to reflect on your own character, because none of this is going to work if you don't have the open mind or the ability to change or accept change on that side of things. We're really good, as Andy pointed out, at transferring assets to the next generation, but not necessarily transferring wisdom. So continue to work on your communication ability and help set up an environment where people feel listened, because when they feel listened to, they develop ownership. And when there's ownership, there's a lot more momentum and motivation to help your farm achieve higher levels of profitability. Work on getting those advisors and mediators together, but most importantly, work on that communication skills and the root of this, making sure that everybody's on the same page for your farm. So that's what I've got for a summary, Corey.
Yeah, and so I got a challenge. My challenge is kind of, it's going to sound selfish, but it's not towards the show. My challenge is, so you took time out of your day to go listen to this particular podcast, but more than likely your dad or mom or brother or sister maybe doesn't listen. And those are the people that, you know, you want to go take Andy's program, go to agriculturestrategy.com and start having meetings. I would say have them listen to this podcast 1 hour of their day while they're driving the combine, driving to work. You know, they could listen to this and just get kind of the direction that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. And listen to it. And then you can start, talk to Andy, go to his website and get things rolling. That'd be my challenge.
But okay, let's do this, because this is going to happen. Our listeners are great and they will follow that challenge. Mm-hmm. So now, if this is the first time you have listened to a Farm for Profit podcast, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And I hope that you enjoyed it and you want to explore some of these others. We have a lot lighter topics. We have a lot of fun, but ultimately our goal is, just like the person who sent you this podcast, is to help you achieve higher levels of profitability. So continue to check us out, but ultimately thank you. Thank you for taking the time to listen to whoever sent this to you. Andy, thank you again for spending your time with us, for working around our schedules. And yeah, you got anything else?
I'd like to give another challenge to your listeners. Is I'd like you to come up with a list of 20 of your friends from college and the friends you've made in farming over the years in farming organizations. And what I'd like to challenge you on is for the 20 working days of the week, of the month. So basically, if you just go Monday to Friday, to make one phone call a day to that list of 20 people and to ask them what's one thing that they've done to improve farm profitability. And, you know, it's pretty tough. One of the things that I've seen over the years is there's a bunch of ideas at the start when I started working with a family on how to make $5,000 extra profitability. But if you call that person on the second day of the month or the third Wednesday of the month, every month for 12 months, you'll develop relationships. I mean, when you're driving a tractor, you're often fiddling around with your phone. Why not call your friends and see what they're doing just to socialize, but also pick their brains for one idea? And, you know, if you can bring one of those ideas to the table every week, your farm will be at a whole different level of profitability within a year's time.
I like that. That's a bonus challenge. That was a good one.
That is good.
That is great. Listeners, thank you again. Don't forget to submit your ideas, your topics, your questions, farmforprofitllc@gmail.com. That's how we got this topic, and I think you know how much needed this episode was. So continue, send stuff in. We will try to help and address those as much as possible. Don't forget to like, rate, review, and share. And until next time, have a good one.
Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long.